This is Ashley Hodge with the Sikkim 365 podcast, joined by Kendall Kaut. Ring before spring, I guess we can still call it that. Hope springs eternal. We got a good winning streak in football, and we're ready to get on a big winning streak in basketball. We've already won one in a row. That's the hardest part of winning. 35 in a row. Then you got to win the second one. Second one's a little more challenging. UConn, we're going to talk about that. Kendall, how you doing?
Doing well, Ashley. Excited to talk hoops.
Yeah, it's a great season. Football ended with a great note. We got a good bowl to look forward to and lots of momentum in the football program. Looked very dismal at 2-4, but now they're 8-4 and playing really good football. And so this isn't a football podcast. We'll leave that to other people. We're going to talk basketball. Kendall, we noticed that we got some issues. I would say defensively, we are not as good as we hoped. Let's talk about the optimistic case for how this defense can get better. I've been a proponent that I don't think we're going to be a great defense. I think we can be a great offense. I really think our top end is number one in the country in offensive efficiency, which would be incredible. That's going to be hard to get to, but I think it's possible. But I think on the defensive end, I don't think there's a ceiling quite that high. But I do think we can keep people in front of us, and we can play a lot better defense than what we've shown in some of the games so far. What say you?
I think there's potential. And so we'll discuss the optimistic case, and we can obviously discuss the pessimistic one too, Ashley. I think the optimistic one would be Jaden Nunn still defending quite well. Norchad Omier can do well on the perimeter. If you look at some of the advanced stats, Rob Wright struggles on that end of really hampered Baylor. He'll probably get better. Josh Oak can defend the perimeter, and then Baylor will have more time to meld together. I think would probably be the optimistic case. What might be a little concerning is that normally, you know, I can rant for 4 minutes about any topic, and I'm a little worried I don't have a 5-minute rant about, well, here's where Baylor's going to get a lot better defensively. When you look at the optimistic case, Ashley, what maybe stands out to you, or where do you think they could improve?
Well, I think VJ Edgecombe has potential to be a tremendous defender. He's good on the ball. He's incredibly athletic. I think he leads our team in steals and maybe shot blocking as well. I think he can be, you know, just an outstanding, you know, rebounder, defensive rebounder. That's one thing that we've been pretty good at is defensive rebounding. That's been kind of a surprise. I mean, Norchad Omier is a double-double machine. I mean, he is a glass eater for sure. But, you know, you look at some of these games, even the ones where we got blistered, you know, pretty well. Defensive rebounding's been, you know, better the last few games. I mean, we're 209. I mean, so it's not incredible. But I have noticed some progress in that area.
Yep. And maybe one other statistical category you could look at is to say 3-point percentage. Opponents are shooting 41% from three. Baylor obviously has played horrendous 3-point defense in terms of some of those open shots. You can probably still visualize in the Tennessee games, the St. John's game, the Gonzaga game. But even in an open gym, when you're just running around against guys, not really trying that hard, it's really tough to shoot 41% from three. And so if that number drops to 37.5%, still not where you want it to be, still on a very high number of attempts, Baylor's 282nd in amount of 3 points allowed. And probably the most concerning stat when I look at any Baylor stat on defense right now is that 64% of opponent makes are assisted. You know, in one sense, that's bad because it shows the defense isn't reacting well. In another sense, maybe it's okay because it shows that the guys aren't just getting blown by on the perimeter like they were last year all the time.
Right.
But just some reversion to maybe 37.5, 38%. You're talking about maybe a 5-point difference in a game. That wins another Big 12 game or two. So that's another point. But I do agree in the general sense that VJ Edgecombe is a much better defender than some people could have hoped for, and I think he's a lot better than the last two one-and-done freshmen for Baylor.
Yeah. You know, you love to see more grit defensively from Jeremy Roach. He's a veteran guy. I thought he was a pretty good defender at Duke. You know, he's not nearly on the level of even like a James Akinjo, in my opinion, as far as his ability to really pressure the ball. So hopefully that will improve, and he can be challenged in that area. Norchad has some issues defensively. You know, he's as good as he is, athletic as he is. I mean, he should be a tremendous defender. Now, I think a lot of it is he's being told we can't get you in foul trouble. So, you know, he's picking his spots. You know, I think it was a game against St. John's. There, we needed a defensive stop, and he got a really key block in that game down the stretch. You know, so I think he's capable of being a consistent defender when the moments, you know, call for it. I think Jalen Celestine, I think, is a solid defender, but he's not rebounding nearly as well as we had hoped. And the biggest problem is we're really poor at rim defense. You know, block percentage is statistically it's not too bad. I think the field goal effective field goal percentage is really poor. We're 332 effective field goal percentage, and you mentioned the 41%, 355 on the 3-point percentage. So we're just letting up too many easy buckets, too many at the rim, and too many also at the 3-point line. We do turn teams over. We're pretty good at that. I think that's got to be our bread and butter defensively. We just got to create havoc on the perimeter. I've been preaching that, and I think VJ and Jaden Nunn, like you said, are a big reason why we can excel in that area.
Yeah, absolutely have to turn people over like madmen. Probably the only real viable path to success is just to get an insane number of turnovers. And then with Langston back, as long as he's healthy, I think you basically have to just say some guard is going to have to foul out of about every game going for turnovers, right? Because they have the bodies between Rob, Langston, Jaden, VJ, and Jeremy. You have five guys that can all play at least the two guard spot,
yep,
with that combination of dudes. And so you got to say, look, I don't care. If you want to play more minutes, go get a turnover in the next 4 minutes and we'll keep you in.
Right.
Would almost be the mindset I would have if I were a coaching staff.
Yeah, good points. Yeah, I mean, it's frustrating because we know what the formula is to win and advance in the tournament. You know, we saw that in 2021 with the tenacious defense, really good communication. And then I think we're on path to have that again the next year. We have, you know, guys like Sohan and Kendall Brown, even though they were freshmen, long guys. Sohan in particular really bought in on the defensive end. And then, of course, I think Akinjo was pretty good in that area. Flo Thamba, you know, as limited as he was a solid defender. John, you know, before he got hurt, was a really good defender, very active. But then, you know, since then, it's not been good. I mean, we had the next year we struggled defensively and just tried to outscore people, and we saw that wasn't a recipe to even make it to the second weekend of the tournament. Similar deal, you know, last year with Eve Missy and Jacoby Walter, Ray J. Dennis. We had some length, but I think we just struggled to keep people in front of us and just had too many blow-bys, as Jeremy Roach talked about when I did a podcast with him, and how Duke just isolated Jacoby Walter and just went right at him. So I don't think we have the weaknesses as far as that's concerned, but, you know, we certainly, I put it on paper that we're not going to defend at the rim. You know, Josh is not good at that at all. And, Norchad's solid, but he's trying to stay out of foul trouble. So we got issues there. And we're, like you said, we're just going to have to be tenacious on the perimeter, try to create, you know, a lot of turnovers and steals. We've seen teams be able to have really good defenses, you know, doing that in the past. Like Bill Armstrong had an LSU squad that was number 6 in defensive efficiency, that was, you know, top 5 in steals and top 5 in turnover percentage his last year at LSU. And, you know, I know he's one of the guys in charge of a defense philosophy. So, I think we got to simplify things. I think we got to decide, you know, what works best and really try to, you know, get better at that. I don't think we're going to be a top, 40 defense, you know, even top 30 defense, but I think it's possible for us to get into that, below 40 range.
Still early enough in the season that would seem to be possible. I know we'll probably talk about Big 12 a little bit later on, but there doesn't appear to be any complete juggernaut in the league. Right. Maybe KU gets there, maybe Iowa State, maybe Cincinnati. But I think that clearly Arizona is much worse. Houston, I think, is going to continue to trend downward, especially with Kelvin Sampson publicly calling out LJ Cryer recently to say that they don't even have a dude on their team, which is the difference between this year and all their previous iterations of Houston. So I think it's a gettable league to find 11 wins, even if you're not anywhere near as good as you might have been the last 2 or 3 years. And I'm not saying they're not, but it's a gettable league to try and warm yourself up. It's not the gauntlet that I think it's been in the past. I think for the first time in at least recent memory, I think the SEC is better than the Big 12 in basketball.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, it certainly looks to be trending that way, especially at the top. You know, the SEC has Alabama, although they lost to Oregon last night. Auburn looks really strong. There's some good teams in the SEC at the top for sure. The bottom of the league in the Big 12 is probably better. You know, Oklahoma State, maybe the worst team, perhaps TCU. I think TCU would make a strong argument for that being the worst team. But like you said, I mean, Arizona is not as good as we thought they might be preseason, or at least not yet. And Houston's got their major issue. They're good, but, you know, it's they don't have that finisher. LJ really struggled in some of their high-profile games to, you know, really come through in the clutch. And then, you know, Sharp isn't really that guy either. You know, he's good, but he's not, you know, taking over games at the end. So I think Baylor, you know, has those finishers. We just got to, you know, have more close games and not be trailing by 15 at the under four timeout.
I certainly agree with you there. And I know we always compare Baylor teams to recent ones that have come against them, or kind of try to find a similar team. Is there any recent team you feel is really similar to this one at all, Ashley? And I've tried to think about that, and I'm like, there really isn't a recent Baylor team that feels similar to this one, at least in my mind.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably closer to the team 2 years ago, you know, just because of the strength of the backcourt when we had Cryer, Flagler, and Keyonte George. But, you know, I think we have, you know, more depth this year in the backcourt, and we don't really have anybody, and that team didn't have anybody like Norchad. So I would agree with you. I think this team has higher upside than both of the teams in the last 2 years. And really just because I think they can keep people in front of them defensively. I think offensively we're about the same as we were those previous 2 years. Would you agree with that statement?
I think so. I think maybe they're not quite as good as the offense was 2 years ago. I agree with you. Norchad is substantially better than anybody Baylor had in the front court in the fifth-year Flo Thamba experience, or Igmisi still getting it figured out as a freshman, although obviously a really great game against KU and Waco. So I think the ceiling is much higher for this team, but I also do think the floor is a lot lower than it was those last two seasons, where you can kind of always count on, well, Ray J will get us a bucket and keep us in this, or we'll figure something out with Eve defensively, or the year prior, hey, at least one of the three guards will really get nuclear at some time, and that will allow us to keep up scoring wise. So I think that's probably where I would say that I think the ceiling's higher, but I also think the floor is lower for this team than any of the teams this decade.
Yeah. And probably, you know, Jalen Bridges probably gives you, you know, a strong reason for that argument, because he was so consistent and he just gave you consistent effort on the glass. And, you know, I think, you know, I don't think he missed a game. If you know, he you could just rely on him. And I don't know. I think Celestine is a better shooter than Bridges. Time will tell if he can be as consistent. But I just don't think he has that kind of consistent, you know, every night you're gonna, you know, kind of what you're gonna get from a performance standpoint. Whereas Bridges, I think, brought that consistency in the front court. And you know, although Norchad is great, you know, and certainly probably an improvement over what we've had in the front court in a long time. You know, they're just issues because Josh isn't giving you much. You know, and I really think you're going to probably see Josh, his minutes might decline, and you know, Langston, you know, we might be playing more four guards, or certainly consistently play three guards, which we're doing already. But anyway, those are my thoughts just off the top of my head.
Yep, and my thought as well with all that, and I think that's all great stuff, Ashley, is that I would rather see Baylor go all out to hopefully make the ceiling and see if they can, you know, get into that second weekend and catch some magic,
right,
than just think, okay, we know we can make the tournament if we play these guys this number of minutes, but we're not going to get any better probably, and if we do this, we'll be an 8 seed and we'll get bounced in the first weekend guaranteed. That's not really what I think the goal should be. Obviously, Scott Drew, after consideration, came back to Baylor thinking he could win another national championship here. So I do hope that, as you mentioned, there's an interesting debate around Josh. Do you play him more hoping, hey, he does good things in the perimeter, we'll figure out a scheme behind him, And that's the best bet because you can't play Norchad 37 minutes asking him to do so much offensively and defensively. Or is it just it's year three? He had all summer. He's not improved in any capacity on the interior. I mean, there's an argument he might be a worse rebounder now than he even was when he walked in as a freshman,
Right.
which I think is the only Baylor big that you could honestly say that about. And so does that warrant dwindling his minutes? I don't know what the answer is to that one because I think these are tough problems to debate. But I think the best version of Baylor is Norchad, healthy Langston, Jaden, and then two other guards that could be Jeremy, could be Rob, could be somebody else, but they'll get those guards enough minutes that I'm not really worried about that combination, but I am. Can I get Langston healthy? Because if he's not healthy, I think this team's not making it past the first weekend. But if he's healthy, then I think you can start talking about, well, Baylor football kind of turnaround happened for Baylor basketball.
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying there. And I think I love the fact, I know we're doing it for NIL purposes. Obviously the Gonzaga game was an NIL game, and we knew Tennessee was going to be a formidable challenge on the other side of this bracket. We didn't really get any favors having St. John's. If we'd had Virginia, perhaps that Tennessee game the next night, turns out differently. But we didn't, Tennessee got Virginia. So I think that we have a good idea of what our weaknesses are much earlier in the season this year than maybe in some other seasons. I mean, we've always played a tough schedule, but I don't, we preseason at least, we're look we thought we were going to go up against three top 10 teams. Now Connecticut doesn't look like they're that good, and not yet at least. Hopefully they don't get right on Wednesday night. They have a lot of talent. They have a championship DNA. They're playing at home. I expect a much more spirited effort from them. But they've played a bunch of cupcakes. I mean, their non Maui schedule would even be embarrassing to a team like Texas Tech, I think. Sacred Heart, New Hampshire, Lemoyne, East Texas A&M, Maryland Eastern Shore. All in the 311 to 361 range on KenPom, and then the games that they've had, which are more of a challenge, they've lost them all. They lost to Memphis, they lost to Colorado, which is a big surprise. It's number 79 KenPom, and then they lost to Dayton, who's solid, but they got smacked pretty good. 18-point loss to Dayton, so they're vulnerable. And Alex Caravan, I think, had a concussion in that Dayton game. He didn't play in the Maryland Eastern Shore game yesterday, and I assume he's going to play in the Baylor game. I would be really surprised if he doesn't. But if he doesn't, I mean, that changes things a lot. He's the one guy that you can rely on. He's very consistent. Championship DNA. Won two national championships, and really the one guy that played a lot of minutes on those championship teams. But I think they're gettable. Baylor can walk out of there with a win. And Baylor's, battle tested. UConn is now to some degree after Maui as well. But they and UConn's got a gauntlet coming up. They got to play Texas at Texas on Sunday, and then they got Gonzaga after that, and then they start Big East play. So I think we're both trying to both teams really are going to have some growing pains this year, Connecticut and Baylor. But Baylor really has an opportunity after this UConn game. Although, I think Norfolk State is a sneaky game, that you got to look out for a little bit. But, I mean, they got an opportunity there until December 31st when they play Utah at home, to really make a lot of improvements in the next 27 days and really hone in on what they do well and just get things right, kind of knowing what their weaknesses are, especially after that Gonzaga and Tennessee losses.
Oh, completely agreed. And especially on the scheduling front, I do not think any team should have the reaction if they get blown out by a really good team to say, play a bad non-conference schedule. Because I think Texas Tech has really screwed themselves by playing virtually nobody. I know they played St. Joe and they played Syracuse, but they're probably going to end up playing one top 100 KenPom team in the non-con. Maybe, I guess Aggie as well is coming up, but their non-con is probably going to finish sub 300, and they already lost to St. Joe's, which means if they don't beat Aggie, I think they might have to win 11 Big 12 games to feel secure about making the NCAA tournament. Oklahoma's had that problem in recent seasons where they felt safe, and then you get down the stretch, you're 8-10, 9-9, you're like, wow, we're not dancing. And so you'd rather be in this spot because you can excuse away when the committee looks at it, losing to Tennessee, you can excuse away losing to Gonzaga, but you really can't excuse away playing the worst non-conference imaginable and then losing to one of those bad teams, because that's always possible. You drop a game to a bad team. So I don't think that should be a takeaway anybody ever has of let's schedule easier. And maybe you don't have to open the season with Gonzaga. But have you seen the Evan Miyakawa stat, Ashley, about opponent quality?
I don't think so.
He has this stat that he's now added on the team ratings that folks can see that's free to view, and it's opponent adjustment. And he writes briefly that this measures how well each team performs above or below expectation based on if they are playing an above average opponent on their schedule or below average opponent. And the thing that's interesting for Baylor is the last two seasons, the Bears have ranked the worst, now this season and last season, among top 50 teams when they play better teams. And so that's probably a concern, is just, what's going on with some of Baylor's guys? Have they gotten some of these, are some of these one and done guys really good at, hey, I'm athletic, I know how to dominate guys that are worse than me because I did that in high school. But when you come up against better people, does that become a little bit of a problem for you? Or does that mean Baylor's teams just play really hard all the time? Houston struggled with this category last season. They're the second worst this season among top 50 teams. But that will be something Baylor really needs to prove. And I think if there's a debate in the committee room about seed line for Baylor, or if, heaven forbid, you're a bubble team this season, that could come into play with, did you just pound bad teams and not do quite as well against good teams?
Right.
So that's where I really want to see Baylor do better, is obviously you watch them play New Orleans and these sub 200 KenPom teams, and you think, well, great teams pound bad teams. But it's interesting that Baylor is not doing the same and playing up to the level of competition minus one half against St. John's. And I really don't give credit for the second half against Tennessee, because that game was a foregone conclusion.
Right.
But what's gone on with Baylor these last two seasons that I haven't really been able to assess, for why is there that differential between they just don't play quite as well against the good teams as they do against the bad teams, which you don't really see for all these other teams across the country?
Yeah, that's it's interesting. I wonder how much that stat is skewed by the blowouts this year to Tennessee and Gonzaga. I don't know the answer to that, because I mean you look back. Well, and then last year we get blown out by Michigan State. I'm just looking at the losses here. I mean, the other losses were fairly close. We got smashed by Iowa State in the Big 12 tournament, 14-point loss. But there's not anything embarrassing like there was the Michigan State game. The year before, Marquette obviously hammered us. Other than those games, you're not looking at, really lopsided defeats. Kansas beat us by 16 at their place a couple years ago. I mean, Iowa State beat us by 15. Yeah, I don't know. That's an interesting question. When you said it, I was kind of surprised at that stat, just because outside of those outliers, which include some pretty significant blowouts, Michigan State, Marquette, and then of course the Gonzaga game and the Tennessee games this year. We've been pretty competitive in other games. I mean, we haven't really been just taking it on the chin against good teams, but. Connecticut's a big test. I mean, we could be blown out. I mean, if we come with the level of focus and intensity against Gonzaga and Tennessee and even St. John's in that first half, I mean, that thing can steamroll on us pretty quick. I mean, they're a good offensive team. They shoot the three really well, and that's a recipe, I think, especially at home. That it could get really lopsided. They have some athletes. They certainly have, better front court players, I think, to roll out at the center than we do with Josh. So maybe Josh will step up to the occasion and surprise us. But I think I'm concerned that if we don't really come out and turn them over and cause some havoc on the perimeter, then I think it could be a long night for us.
I think it could too. All that said, UConn is vulnerable.
Yeah.
They've been cut. It is debatable. Is there like almost something, obviously it's worked the last two seasons, but is there something almost wrong with Dan Hurley right now? Like, has the pressure gotten to him? Whatever else? Because it looked like he was going to fight the officials multiple times in Maui. And then in his press conferences, he just sounds completely unhinged. Bob Knight at his worst, it kind of sounds like if you'd given him a chair, I think he would have thrown it in Maui as well.
Right.
So that's probably why it's important that you want to cut UConn early, because I think Dan Hurley is really feeling the pressure, because I don't know if the guy just assumed when he flirted with the Lakers job whether that was real or not. that he could stay at UConn and he was going to win four titles in 5 seasons or something. He's not taking it well, not being the best team in college basketball anymore, and they're far from it right now. And so Baylor needs to win this one, and I'm going to go out on a limb and say Baylor gets it done, Ashley.
Wow. Well, I hope you're right. I'm going to be there. I'm excited to, you know, see that place in person and watch our Bears. We are a little bit more battle-tested than they are. You know, I think we've already been in a tough road environment. That bodes well. We both played in a tough, you know, tournament in a tropical location, in a small gym. But we also have that Arkansas game we can point to, you know, I think, which was a good test for us. So I think we've been in some environments that, you know, are maybe more conducive to us handling the pressure. Okay. But we'll see. You know, we'll see. It's going to be a fascinating test. And I do like the fact that, you know, we played that game on Wednesday and, you know, really had a lot of time to prep, you know, for UConn, and UConn had a game today, and I'm sure they had probably, you know, I mean, yesterday is what I meant, Saturday, but because they came from Maui, you know, their turnaround time to prep for us is a little bit less. They have a couple days. You know, they're at home. You know, that's a tough place to win. They got, you know, a lot of confidence, you know, coming off of two magnificent seasons, but totally new roster. You know, it's a different team. And as we saw after we won the national championship and had those two teams, you know, back in back-to-back years that were championship caliber teams, or even 3 years in a row, that it's hard to sustain that. I mean, it doesn't just happen. So I think, you know, we have an opportunity to really kick them while they're down and come out of there with a win. I agree with you.
Yep, I think it's very possible. And are you flying up with the team, Ashley? On
I am
Tuesday?
Not. I'm meeting some great bears, Mall Bear, Bear Claw, Roughneck. We're meeting in Boston tomorrow.
Okay,
we're going to go to Celtics Heat on Monday night, and we're going to go to the Bruins and Red Wings on Tuesday night, and then we've already obtained a driver that's going to take us from Boston to Stores. Wait for us while we hopefully pull off the upset and then take us back to Boston on Wednesday night. And then we're going to fly out Thursday morning. So it's a sports overdose for 3 days. It's
How far is that drive going to be for y'all, Ashley?
I think it's 72 miles.
That's way closer than I thought.
Yeah. So it's not bad. The weather's going to be nice and chilly. So that'll be great. And it's a winter in Boston, and the cold weather that comes with that, you know, normally is going to be there. So we're packing some sweatshirts and some winter coats and all that kind of good stuff. But yeah, hopefully we can have a lot of stories to relay about the experience. I don't know if I'll be able to do a post game pod because I may once I get back to the hotel, I guess, in Boston. But you know, I usually do that, you know, pretty soon after the game's over, but I think we're going to be hopping in the car and, you know, on the drive back. So, but if we win, hopefully I can catch a player for a post game interview and get their immediate reaction afterwards.
Oh yeah, no, I bet you will. That'll be great coverage.
Yeah. So, it's an interesting year. So who's impressed you in the Big 12? I've watched, you know, quite a bit of Big 12 basketball, very impressed with West Virginia and how they played. And in the Bahamas, they're better and grittier than I thought they were. You know, two huge wins against Gonzaga and Arizona, and then they played Louisville tough in an overtime game as well. I thought they impressed me, you know, just from the bottom of the league. That, you know, Colorado, when they beat UConn, I watched most of that game. They were, you know, certainly looked a little better than I thought they would be. But wouldn't you agree that Kansas and Iowa State right now look like maybe the class of the league?
I agree. There's maybe a case for Cincinnati as well. The best player on the Bearcats.
You like them? I mean, I haven't watched them, but I look at their schedule. They beat Georgia Tech, and then other than that, it's like a Texas Tech-like schedule so far. They got Villanova this week.
Very reasonable claims. I do think Cincinnati has a case just with the analytics. Haven't watched them nearly as much as the other teams. KU looked really good against Duke. Still the debate rages about Hunter Dickinson's always a top five KenPom player of the year from his Michigan days to now, but he gets thrown out of that Duke game, and then KU seems to go in another gear. And then Zeke Mayo, the South Dakota State guy they picked up to share the backcourt with DeJuan Harris, looks like one of the best transfer portal additions of the season. He's been phenomenal for KU.
Right. Yeah, I mean KU's, North Carolina gave them a scare, but they ended up winning that game. Beat Michigan State by 8, and then good game against Duke the other night. Did you think Hunter Dickinson should have been thrown out for that foul?
That's a good debate. I wasn't offended either direction. But I thought because there was a case that maybe it was more incidental, probably not. But because you don't want a guy to get kicked on the ground, I was not offended by saying that's a flagrant two. But what was your thought on it, Ashley?
I would have called it a flagrant one. I think that was a reputational foul, kind of like if Brock Cunningham had done the same thing, he would have been thrown out. But I will say that the Duke guy, I can't remember who, as Hunter Dickinson was in the air trying to get the rebound or tip it, the Duke guy did back his body into Dickinson and give him a full box out, and kind of, got him in a vulnerable position. So I understand why the reaction, that Dickinson gave, happened. I'm sure he's saying it was unintentional, but it clearly looked like it was intentional. But I think given those circumstances, I would have leaned towards flagrant one. Those are tough judgment calls. And Kansas was able to get the win regardless, even though their best player gets bounced, from the game. And once again, it's the argument is, can you really rely on freshmen to give you those big moments down the stretch? Maybe you can in March, but they're pretty heavily relying on Knipple and Flagg, and they made some mistakes down the stretch that couldn't get it done. Caleb Foster is only a sophomore. They have some veterans, coming off the bench. Cyan James, Mason Gillis, Tyrese Proctor's experience, but they are very heavily reliant on freshmen. I don't know if that's the formula to get you where you need to go.
No, and I'd be terrified if I were Houston. They've now gone all in on trying to. I think Kelvin Sampson's convinced himself to take a step back, that the reason he has lost recently in the tournament is that he has not had enough talent. But you're Kelvin Sampson, your entire goal is just to work people to death and hope that the sum becomes better than the individual parts. I think he's kind of losing sight of what his mission is or what his philosophy is. And I don't think it's going to work for them to be the five-star factory.
I
So
agree.
I don't think that's going to go well for Houston. I think though Kelvin's feeling the effects of time and probably thinking if he only has 3 or 4 good years left, he's not going to wait around and get out talented. But I really don't think he's doing the right thing with his change in philosophy. I just don't think that's Houston basketball.
Right. And that debate is worth having with Baylor basketball as well. We already have, Tunde Iyesufu in the fold for 2025. He's a really talented guy. Koa Peete, is a guy I think the Baylor leads for, and I have a feeling we might end up with him. The question is that a good thing? And in this day and age, you got, your top three players are getting like 75% of the NIL money, and then you're paying another four or five guys. And then, the guys that are 9 through 13, you're pretty much just happy to be on scholarship and aren't going to get paid NIL. I mean, that's kind of the formula that most teams are going to. But when you have two freshmen making, top three, top four money, I don't know. I mean, you usually play who you pay, and if you're just like the NBA, you're trying to rely on, these are my three best players, and Koa Peete's probably going to be one of your three best players, but are you going to have two freshmen be, two of your three best players? And is that a good thing if they are? I mean, it's th those are really important questions, and I think, kind of back to your statement you made earlier in the podcast, I think if Drew's going to do, what's best for the upside of this team, one interesting question to ask is our best upside having VJ Edgecombe on the ball, a lot more, and having him drive. He's a good distributor. I think he's an underrated distributor. He's got the kind of freak athleticism and burst that very few people in the country have, so he can get where he needs to go with the ball in his hands. And you brought in Roach to play that. Rob Wright is a really good point guard. He's our point guard of the future for sure. The question is, is VJ that guy that might give you the most upside if you use him in that role? We saw Keontae George, you know, didn't really play much point guard at Baylor, and then he goes to the NBA, he plays point guard. So what's your thoughts on that? Any comments on that?
Yep, I'm very open to playing him at point for stretches, or just doing that, hey, the next time out's going to be five high ball screens for VJ, or he gets the ball in these spots and it goes well. I also would say I don't think Baylor should feel any loyalty this late in the season to, if you decide the team's better with Rob Wright or some other combination where Jeremy Roach plays off the ball, they're all getting paid now, some quite well. And so if you decide you have to make Jeremy Roach your primary two guard and play point guard some, I don't think that's a problem. He's a fifth-year senior. He's getting paid. He wasn't going to be the point guard at Duke. I think he's done well at times as point guard. Obviously, the amazing shot he hit against St. John's. But I do think the probably best version of Baylor is Rob Wright at point guard in March, as opposed to Jeremy Roach at point guard. Because then you're also working Rob Wright in, who I think is very talented at getting guys the ball and getting guys shots a little bit more than Jeremy Roach. So I think too much right now, the offense, although top 10, is just throw, throw, throw. And Jeremy Roach is most effective when he's got a little bit of an advantage getting to the hoop. And I think Rob Wright's a lot better at setting guys up and understanding how to run the pick and roll coming from such a high-profile high school program.
Yeah, I don't disagree with any of those arguments. It's going to be interesting to see what changes they make. I mean, this is a great coaching staff. They're learning to coach together for the first time. We're not an inexperienced team. We do have two guys in our rotation that, you know, are freshmen. But other than that, we're all upperclassmen. So we have a lot of experience. We don't have a lot of experience playing together. But I think, you know, there's this next month we can really iron out some of those things. And I think UConn will be another important data point for, you know, those decisions that we make heading into conference. And, you know, I think it's good that we've been exposed by Gonzaga and Tennessee, and how the UConn game goes will be interesting. And I'm sure a big data point as to, you know, how we make adjustments the rest of the season. I do want to bring up one other point. One of the guys that I was talking to that was in the Bahamas mentioned that St. John's, he stayed a couple of days after the tournament, and St. John's played another game against Georgia. And he just made the point that, you know, he was in the casino pretty late at night, the night before the St. John's Georgia game. And he said a lot of the St. John players were also in the casino drinking and gambling late into the night. And they had an early game the next day. So I bring out that point just to say it might be a little bit more of a nightmare for these coaches to keep tabs on their team in a location like that, and perhaps explains why they were so lackluster against Georgia and end up losing that game. And then also could be a possible explanation for maybe a team like Gonzaga, not to discredit West Virginia in any way, but, you know, maybe Gonzaga had this similar issues, you know, where they're like, okay, you know, Baylor was one of the top teams in the Big 12. We know West Virginia is picked at the bottom of the league. We can just have fun, you know, relax, enjoy the island, enjoy the casino. And then I'm purely putting a hypothetical out here, 'cause I have no idea, but, you know, those things happen. These are 18 to 23 year olds. And I could totally see that scenario as to a possible explanation why Gonzaga laid an egg against West Virginia.
It's very possible. You know, I'm happy the guys get paid. But I do wish the portal did not exist as it does, because I think the sport is worse now than it was 5 or 6 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, you know, did you see the BJ Armstrong comments by chance?
I did not. What did he say?
There's a clip going around where he talks about how the game is not as good as it once was. Creativity's gone away from the game. You have a bunch of robots out there shooting threes and just like taking, you know, getting stuff in the paint. Nobody's shooting a mid range. You know, the creativity is less, you know, you're just not, you're working for 3-point shots. You're working for shots in the paint. And then, you know, teams like Alabama and even Baylor, you know, just are, you know, pretty, religious about it. I mean, you just don't see in many mid range shots from those teams at all. When you look at the shot chart, and there's others too. But and it's been proven to be a successful strategy. You know, it's not like, you know, Alabama's, you know, obviously been in the top ratings offensively. Baylor's been in the top ratings offensively. Like, pound the glass, take threes, you know, get shots in the paint. That's the formula. I talked to a Baylor coach about this, and I showed him the BJ Armstrong clip, and his comment was, you know, when you have a new roster, you just have to gravitate towards the things that are the high efficiency, you know, offense. I mean, you don't have time to work on, you know, even though Jeremy Roach is really good at mid-range shots, like getting, you know, a set, you know, for him to get a mid-range shot. You know, usually a lot of that happens at the end of a shot clock when you got to take it. You know, you don't have time to work on, you know, getting Rob Wright floaters, you know, even though he's really good at that. You know, your offense is pretty much focused on getting stuff at the rim or you know, working for a great 3-point shot, because analytically it makes sense to do that. Right. And, so, you know, just one of the casualties of, you know, having, you know, teams that haven't played together a lot, you know, is that you have to kind of gravitate towards those higher analytical, models, which totally makes sense to me. Have you watched Drake play? Did you catch any of them at all?
I have not watched them play. I've certainly seen that they're playing a bunch of D2 guys. Just
Yeah.
Missouri State brings them up, and their continuity seems to be taken over.
Yeah, they play together for a while, and they're just really a fun team to watch. Their communication on offense and defense is terrific, and you know, I mean that's an interesting team to keep an eye on. I mean, they'll probably get, you know, just totally trucked by some more talented teams, but you know, they really are a fun team to watch, and you know, they beat, you know, some solid teams, Vanderbilt, Seton Hall, and Florida Atlantic in their you know, Charleston Classic tournament. But yeah, I mean it's interesting. It's college basketball's changing, and it's you know, definitely it's hard to, you know, have the continuity that we've had in the past because of the transfer portal and because of NIL.
I think so too. And I do think between the NBA and NCAA, if this continues with just the 3-point barrage, and we like threes, but you know, you can like threes in much the same way you can like ice cream and not want to eat it every day the rest of your life.
Right.
I think there'll be some kind of legislation or rule changes to affect it. I saw Chuck Klosterman and Bill Simmons were talking about, yeah, do you have a rule in the NBA that like you get to shoot 30 threes in a game? And so you have to decide, do you want to save your threes for the end? Or if you're a player, oh, am I going to get yelled at if I take this three because I'm wasting one of my 33s? And, man, wouldn't that be interesting then?
Yeah, that's an interesting thought experiment. Miami, Drake beat Miami, not Seton Hall, FYI.
Okay.
That's a really important point that I know our listeners were going to, you know, be hitting our
comments.
Someone
would have caught
correcting,
it.
Yeah. anyway, well, it's, you know, we've gone 40 minutes. I think, it's a good time of year. That UConn game's going to be fun. I'm sure we'll know more about our team after that game, and then we'll get ready for Big 12 play. But, good catching up with you. Everything good in your world?
Yeah. Going, doing well, and good catching up with you as well, Ashley.
Awesome. All right. You've been listening to a Sikkim 365 podcast with Ashley Hodge and Kendall Kalt, Sikkim Bears.
Heck yeah.